It was one of the American dreams of the 1950s, to go to California, to sit in the studio audience, and then make it to the stage on one of these brand new television shows. Evelyn Stewart had 8 children. She'd pushed them to perform, to get noticed. But it was the mother, Evelyn, who herself made it to the most popular show, Queen for a Day.
Queen for a Day is happy to make your wish come true, Queen Evelyn. It's a complete skill home workshop. It includes a skill hand drill, of course, with a complete set of attachments. And there's also
2 of her daughters, Joanne and Debbie, remember what it meant to the family, what it meant to their mother 50 years ago.
To have this unexpected thing happen in her life where she was the star.
She never thought any dream was too far to reach for. You can't strive for it, and you can dream.
Reality television, the early episodes. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced and distributed by American Public Media.
The recent onslaught of reality television is one of the pop culture events of the past 10 years. The formula is simple. It's not who wants to be a millionaire, it's who doesn't. Those chances for wealth and fame have all but taken over television.
It's the new competition show where families face off against each other to prove once and for all, my dad is better than your dad.
Let's meet our family.
America voted, and David, you're in the top 12. Congratulations.
Come on down. Now I'm nervous.
Strapped to a lie detector, contestants will be forced to reveal their most intimate thoughts for cash.
Do fat people repulse you?
Do you really care?
The roots of reality TV actually go well back beyond American Idol, beyond Jeopardy and The Price is Right, back to a program that began over 50 years ago and, in its day, transfixed housewives across the country. It sounded like this.
Would you like to be queen for a day?
And now from the Moulin Rouge, the West's largest theater restaurant, French's, makers of new copper kitchen sauces, and clinging saran wrap, the original plastic food wrap, proudly present Queen for a Day, the Cinderella Show. Starring the king of Queen for a Day, our real
TV Guide called it the number one mesmerizer of middle-aged females and the most relentless dispenser of free washing machines. Millions tuned in every afternoon. The rules were simple. Anyone in the studio audience could submit a short story of their woes and troubles, along with a wish. 5 were selected to come up on stage and tell that story, and the audience applause meter chose the winner. One Friday afternoon in February 1957, 13-year-old Joanne Stewart stood in that line with her mother Evelyn and Aunt Lida. Joanne's mother had written her story on a small card.
At the top of the card it said, "If I were elected to be queen, what would I wish for and why?" And then you filled it out on this little postcard.
And is that the place where your mother would have put down all the difficult things that had happened to the family and why
she... As much as she could. You could only put so much in. And so if you hear my mother being interviewed by Jack Bailey, she got in a lot. So I'm sure that she put a lot of things on that postcard.
After our oldest son got hit and killed with a car and after our house burnt down, we decided to put what things people had been nice enough to present us with after the fire in a trailer and move for a change of luck.
She makes it sound so sad. I wonder, did it seem that way to you growing up?
Well, when my brother was hit by the car, he was 7 and I was like 3 years old. So I don't have a memory of that, but I do remember the house burning down and us having to move to this basement home that didn't have a top to it. And then I remember the trip to California where the trailer came loose and my mother had owned a variety store. So it was loaded with all kinds of things, personal articles and things that were strewn all over the highway. And I can remember us kids trying to gather up the articles and stuff and try to, you know, collect as much as we could. But it was pretty devastating.
It's funny when I listen to your mother on stage, though, there's a kind of determination to her voice, like it almost as if she knew she was going to be chosen.
And on the way down here, our trailer broke loose and smashed everything we had in it to smithereens.
Well, your bad luck followed you a little while, and I hope it's better.
She just always had that about her. When she set out for some dream that she had, somehow it would come true.
What was it like to be in the studio on that day? Do you remember?
Oh, it was exciting. I mean, it was filled with people. I remember the women and just the atmosphere. The Moulin Rouge is a very kind of elegant place and a very large and a carpet and tables. And in fact, they would serve a buffet lunch that you could go and have if you wanted to for not too much money while you were sitting there waiting for the judges as they read the cards to pick their first 25 finalists before they choose the final five.
So this great crystal bowl full of cards got winnowed down to 25, right?
Right. Then they call them up out of the audience by a number, no name, just a number. And, of course, to be sitting there by my mother and have her number chosen was just unbelievable.
How did she react? What do you remember?
Well, I just remember being thrilled to death. It's just something you almost can't believe at the time. But just excited, oh, Mom, I can't believe this, that type of experience. And just thrilled and that I would even be there watching it as a 13-year-old was really exciting.
So then it was 25 and down to 5, right?
Oh, my goodness. And can you imagine what we felt when she was one of the 5? It was just amazing.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Joanne was in that studio audience 50 years ago when her mother was competing to be queen for a day. Joanne remembers how much the contest meant to her mother.
We always felt the pinch growing up. My dad always had 2 jobs, worked very hard. And he had been a milkman, as a grocery clerk. Money was just tight. We knew it was tight. We didn't have a lot of nice things that our friends had. We lived in a very old home that had linoleum floors, no carpet in the living room. And I knew that we were what I would call poor. I knew that. In fact, as I was going through her letters that she had written to her sister, I came across a point where she was trying to explain their dire financial situation that they were in, and she said, I'm going to win Queen for a Day and get us out of this mess. And so I know she had a dream of doing that.
Remember I said earlier that each contestant had to have a story and a wish? Well, Evelyn had a very unusual wish. See, she designed a suspended baby harness, an early version of the Jolly Jumper, a harness with a heavy spring that would suspend the baby from a door frame. Evelyn's wish, the one she told people at Queen for a Day, was to get 300 springs to make those baby harnesses. She called it the bunny hop. If she was to be chosen the winner, it would have to be done by the volume of applause from the audience.
My husband could quit his job and make baby swings instead of the heavy work that he is now doing.
Good for you. Well, you got that figured out. And here you've invented something, and you have a market, and all you need now are 300 springs and an electric drill.
I remember Jack Bailey kind of putting his hand over each one of the women's head, and you would clap. And, I mean, I didn't think I could clap hard enough. It was just terrible. And my mother and another woman actually tied. And so then they have to have this applause meter again go between the two women. And that time, I just know that my hands must have been so sore, but just clapping and clapping as hard as I could.
Could you whistle or shout and cheer?
I think I cheered. Yeah. I think I cheered. I must have. How could you contain yourself not to do that? And so when she got it the second time, it was just unbelievable.
Hey, look at there. Now then, for the most thrilling moment of all, here we go. I crown you Queen Evelyn. Queen for a Day, Queen Evelyn Stewart.
You know, I mean, today someone might think, oh, gee, wouldn't it be great to be on Jeopardy or Price is Right? And I think probably most people, you know, have that dream or American Idol, call it whatever you want, and they think to themselves, yeah, but that, you know, there's so many people who want to get on, we'd never stand a chance. And yet,
exactly.
Here's your mother, and she, for, I don't know, what was it? Was it her determination that kept her at this?
Her creativity, determination, her dreams, her desires, her longings.
Evelyn Stewart's family will tell you that her experience, her being queen for a day, was the highlight of her life. In fact, this is where we find an even more interesting story. And for this, I'm going to turn to another one of Evelyn's daughters, Debbie. At the time when Evelyn Stewart was winning all those prizes on Queen for the Day, she was also 9 months pregnant. And that baby, a baby girl, was born 15 days later. That's Debbie. And for every moment of Debbie's childhood, she knew her mother as the woman who'd really been queen for a day.
It was never not a part of my earliest memories. It was always there. When anyone ever found out my mom was queen for a day, it just became, wow, she was? You're kidding me. What kind of prizes did she get? So it was always a story that just took on a life of its own because people were fascinated with it. It was almost as if my mom was a celebrity to some people, having been in that, grown up in that era.
Did she like to tell the story as well,
Debbie? She did, and we were all a part of it. And every year, you know, for her birthday or whatever, you know, she would be Queen Evelyn. And it just never, ever went away.
Remember, this was the 1950s. There was no such thing as video. There were no tapes. Ordinary people didn't make their own recordings. So there was no real public record of Evelyn's moment on stage. Her daughter Debbie set herself a mission, a detective's mission, to see if she could find evidence of that moment, that episode of Queen for a Day, as a parting gift for her mother, who was by now getting much older. And I'll talk with Debbie about that in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. It might seem that we are at this moment in the golden age of reality television shows. But it's really quite an old idea. 50 years ago, Evelyn Stewart won a live television contest and she became Queen for a Day. Her daughters, Joanne and Debbie, remember how important her prizes were to the family and to her mother.
Trucks would come and deliver things. In fact, while Mother was in the hospital delivering Debbie, the refrigerator came.
So what do we have? We have a refrigerator. What else came?
We have a vacuum. She got a water heater and a washer. Something I remember was the Samsonite luggage she got because I got to take some of it when I went off to school in 1962. And they got a Hot Point TV, and we had one at the time and needed a stove very badly. So somewhere, somehow, she was able to trade that television in on this stove that had a griddle where you could cook pancakes and stuff in the center of it. And a funny story about that is when my parents were moving, they were moving to a home that had a built-in range, and parts of it were broken. And so my dad said, I'm taking this to the dump. And my mother said, you are not. I got that from Queen for a Day, and there is no way that that's going to the dump. And Dad said, yes, it is, and proceeded to load that on a truck or something to take it to the dump. And my mother was just beside herself and jumped in the truck with my father and tried to talk him out of it all the way to the dump and didn't do any good. My mother could usually talk my dad out of anything, so it's kind of an unusual story. So he took that out and left it there. My mother sat on it for the longest time.
Wait a second. At the dump, your mother sat on the stove?
At the dump. My mother sat on the stove before she would finally go get in the car and leave.
It's one of the biggest fights my parents ever had.
Is that right?
Yes.
And this stove was in rough shape. I mean, it probably should have gone to the dump.
Yeah. It was broken. She just wanted it. She just wanted it as a souvenir.
And when you, Debbie, when you were growing up, was it pointed out to you in the house? That's the
vacuum? Oh, yes.
Vacuum,
and
that's
in
the
fact, until the day she died, she had her bedroom furniture with her. So that furniture was there in 1957, and so was I. And
she was never going to let this go.
No, that's why I tell you, it was a big, big thing to her. It was a precious, precious memory of a wonderful accomplishment that she was able to be on Queen
wonderful
for a day.
Wonderful moment.
Your Majesty, here's a gift with many a beauty secret inside. It's the Max Factor Makeup Kit featuring Cream Puff. Cream Puff is Factor's new blend of creamy makeup base and powder, the new way to instant beauty.
Now, when old Dad gets to drilling around there, it's going to be kind of dirty, so you better have this wonderful, compact, all-aluminum vacuum cleaner to clean up. It's efficient, very lightweight, and carries a good housekeeping seal.
I'm sure she was the envy of the neighborhood and anyone else that knew about it. It was quite an unbelievable occurrence because, I mean, who would think that she would go on Queen for a Day, and then who would think you'd win all these gifts when they were in such need of so many of these things? So, and she appreciated and was grateful for all of it, and that's why she didn't want to get rid of it. She was a very grateful woman.
I mean, would she have been protective of her vacuum, for example? No, be nice to that. That's my Queen for a Day vacuum. I mean,
I doubt my mother used the vacuum very much. My dad was the housekeeper. And so that vacuum probably meant a great deal to my dad. I don't think anyone could have been more excited than my dad to have received these gifts. You know, he worked so hard, and then to have this windfall, I'm sure, was just like a miracle. In fact, as kids, I mean, we just thought we were rich now, you know, and famous. And it was just exciting. My mother was a very sweet person, and she would never holler at anybody to not touch this or don't do that with something. Just sweet-natured. But my dad, you know, he'd be very particular. And he wouldn't want spots on the fridge, and he'd want the fridge cleaned out. So he took a lot of pride in those things, for sure.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. As I said earlier, this is a rags and riches tale. But in more recent years, it's also become quite a detective story. Evelyn was getting older, and her daughter Debbie wanted something more than the one commemorative photo of her mother's crowning. What she really wanted was film footage of the show from that day. She finally tracked down Ron Adler, who oversees the library of old TV shows. She told him how much that show meant to her mother and to the family, and that her mother was dying, and couldn't he please help hunt for that episode? And she got to him.
And he said, you know, I'm going to do something for you here. I want you to give me 2 weeks, though. Write down everything you can think of and email it to me. And
you mean the date and the time and all the circumstances, anything that'll help him search this out?
Tell me something special about the show that was different, that was unusual, just something that will help us to trigger what episode that might have been. And if it's there, we'll find it. He did contact Mr. Raymond Morgan Jr., the president of Queen for a Day, who was the son of the original president of Queen for a Day by the same name. He felt so sorry for me, and he told Ron Adler.
This is funny. It's like you're telling your own sob story.
Yeah, I have a sob story of my own. I know.
Get on. But I have to stop you for a minute. This guy, Raymond Morgan Jr., you say is president of Queen for a Day, but the show hasn't been on the air now for what, 45 years?
It's 1964. Yeah.
So what's he president of? Is it?
Well, he has memorabilia out in New York. He gets contacts for all kinds of things.
So you weren't the only one looking for information about Queen for a Day. There's people who still look for memorabilia, that sort of
thing? There's actually an alumni of women that get together every year that are still living. There aren't very many living that get together.
Was your mother a part of this? I guess she didn't
know,
right?
My mom did not know about the alumni group, and it broke our hearts. We said, what? And he said, I'm sure your mother would have gotten a letter. But I guess we had moved one too many times, and they lost track of her.
So what did he have for you?
So he felt bad and wrote Mr. Ron Adler and said, as a consolation gift, I'd love to give her one of my prized possessions, a souvenir from my own private collection. And he writes me back in this very heartfelt, wonderful note that says, your mother will always be a queen in our hearts because she won on this program and her children seem so devoted to find something for her. We're very sorry we can't come up with something, but this is the best that we can do. So I was thrilled. He said it would be coming in the mail.
You didn't know what you were going to get.
Didn't know anything. Didn't know if it was a picture. Didn't know anything. In fact, Joanne, if she remembers, thought maybe it was the crown, the actual crown. Oh, so she had big ideas. Of course, that never...
I'm thinking maybe it's going to be a television or a living room set.
I had no idea what it would be. I didn't know if it would be a sash. Honestly, I had no idea what it would be. And so, I was so eager and excited. So when it finally came, it was a panoramic picture, as you see right here in front of you.
Yeah, you brought it to the studio. It's about 30 inches wide.
By about 10 inches, I'd say.
And you know, the it's a panorama of the studio audience, and it's really, though it's black and white and from 1957, it's really clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can see the faces and the hair and of the people at the very back. So anyway, you got the photograph for a day. But so did it say when it was taken?
No. So I receive it on February 6, 2007 in the mail. UPS drops it off. And in that is a letter written on the original letterhead of Queen for a Day from Mr. Morgan. And he explains to me how sorry he is that he's not able to help me with the original footage and lets me know how kinescopes don't survive very long. The kinescope films, they deteriorate over time. So the seven remaining is all that they have. Anyway, he tells me in the letter, in a paragraph, he says, imagine your mother sitting right here among over 2,000 ladies just like these, and she won. I'd say that's quite an accomplishment. This is where she was on that day, and it would have looked just like this. I've waited years and years to give this souvenir to someone who would treasure it. I know that's you and your lovely mother. Congratulations from all of us here at Queen for a Day.
It's really sweet.
It was fantastic. So anyway, I get the picture, I call my sisters, and I say, I got the souvenir. It's a panoramic photograph, an original. Well, one sister, it's always good to have more than one sister, because one sister said, well, is Mom in the audience? And I said, well, no. She said, then why did he give it to you? And I said, Judy, it's a consolation gift.
It's a souvenir photograph.
It's a souvenir because they can't give me something that Mother was in. And she says, well, how do you know Mom's not in it? And I said, well, Judy, why would she be? He even says he knows it's from the decade, but he has no idea what day this was taken or even what year. He just knows it's from the decade. That's it. So she said, well, after your 10 years of searching, I can't believe you wouldn't try to find Mom in there. Well, she can't see the picture, but you can right now, right, Dick?
Yeah,
and you can see how tiny these women are.
Most of the heads are smaller than a pencil eraser.
They are so tiny, but you're right. It is really good resolution. Yeah. So I said, Judy, you have no idea how tiny these heads are. These are like what you call pinheads. She goes, do you have a magnifying glass? I said, I guess. She goes, well, why wouldn't you see if Mom's in there? And I said, what are the chances she'd be in here? She said, after 10 years of searching, how could you not? I said, fine. So I said, I'll go through it. Call you back.
How diligent were you? Did you just sort of scan it with the magnifying
first
glass?
First, I scanned it real quickly, and I could see how funny, the funny expressions on these women were in here. And I was actually home alone. My husband was out of town. It was just me in the living room. And I started laughing out loud in the living room. I said, these are the funniest pictures. Look at these ladies' faces. Because with the magnifying glass, you could really see it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I decided, because I was having so much fun doing this, that I would just go row by row with this magnifying glass. Still really not looking for my mom, because I didn't think my mom would be here. I was doing it for the sheer entertainment value of looking at this old souvenir photo that Mr. Morgan had graciously given me. And lo and behold, not even halfway through, I'd say the first 10 minutes, I stopped short. I don't think I even breathed. I saw this woman, and I could not believe it. And I just stared at it. And I said, oh, my word, that's Mom. I had seen many pictures of her as a young woman. It looked like her. She has.
Were you sure? I mean, as you say, it's a tiny little photograph. Or did you just think it might be her?
At the moment, I said to myself, my mind's playing tricks on me. I want it so badly to be her that I think this is her. But then again, the other side of me knew she wouldn't be in here, so I wasn't even looking for her. And there she was. But it was hard to actually grasp that this photo, of all the things Mr. Raymond could have given me, would have my mother in it.
You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. Debbie eventually confirmed that it was her mother in the photo because she found her sister Joanne and her Aunt Lida there as well. She couldn't believe her good luck. Now, at this time, her mother's health was failing, so Debbie flew from Pennsylvania out to her mother's bedside in California, and she showed the photo to her. Well, she set it up as a surprise.
And I said, let's see if you're in this picture. This is a picture of Queen for a Day, of the audience. Let's see if you're in here. So I took the magnifying glass, and we went through different women. Is that you? No. And finally, I came across her picture, and I said, "Is that you?" And she didn't speak, and she just stared at it. And she said, "Yes, I think it is." And I said, "Is it, Mom?" And she said, "Yes." Then I went down to Aunt Lida, and I said, "Is this Aunt Lila?" Because I always got my Aunt Lida and Lila mixed up all the time. So I said, "Is this Aunt Lila?" And she said, "No." And I was like, "Oh, no." And I'm thinking to myself, "It's not, you know." And then she said, "It's Aunt Lida." So I was like, "Yay!" So anyway, they're all there. And Joanne has seen the picture in person now, and everybody.
Joanne, tell me what it was like for you when you saw the photograph for the first time.
It was, like Debbie said, hard to believe. What are the chances that this one photo that was taken, our mother would be in it? It just seemed unbelievable that this could really be the picture. But Debbie had it blown up,
yeah.
And we
yeah,
looked at it. We compared it to the Queen for a Day picture that was taken with Jack Bailey, and all of that matches up with the jewelry and the way the hair looked and everything. So it appears to be so.
And Debbie, when you showed it to your mother, did she know at that time what you'd gone through to get the photo?
I had been telling her off and on before she got sick. She developed short-term memory loss. So she kind of forgot that, this had been going on for quite a few years. But what she did know is that we always made a big deal out of Queen for a Day, because that's part of her long-term memory. It could have been more joyous 2 years earlier if I had found it. But she was really happy with it, and we talked about it. We read some letters. She, like I said, her mind was very there. She just couldn't speak a lot. So the funny story is when I called Mr. Morgan after verifying it, well, he's just ecstatic about it, and he just said, if there's anyone ever calls me about a program, stranger things have never happened. I'm going to be sure to give them your name and number. Is that all right? And I said, you bet.
I want to know what it meant to you, though, because it clearly was something that you spent a lot of time at, trying to find these ways of connecting your mother in her last year back to the event that seemed to have marked her life. Did you get from that what you hoped that you would
yes,
get from
and
that?
In fact, even more. I have shed tears over getting this photograph. My family can tell you it meant everything to me to finally find something that my mother was in that I could give to her. And the only downside, if there was a downside, is that my mom was bedridden at the time that I ended up giving it to her. But I'm so glad, because she died a month and a half later.
You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. After Evelyn Stewart's death, when her kids took on the task of sorting through her possessions, that's when the second unusual discovery was made. It was an LP, a black vinyl album that was tucked away. Joanne is the one who found it.
It was on the very top shelf in a box that was getting corroded. And on it, it said, "Do not destroy family records." And by records, we mean the actual vinyl records that you would play. As a family, we would often sing songs and record our own records. And it was coming around Christmas time, and I was thinking, what could I give my brothers and sisters this year? I usually like to give some type of memorabilia. And I decided to look at those records and see if maybe I could get one made into a CD. When I saw the record of Queen for a Day that I had completely forgotten
about.
What
was on the record? What did it say?
It just said Evelyn Stewart's coronation of Queen for a Day.
And did you have a turntable, a way of playing it to find out what you had?
No, I didn't. So I went through the yellow pages and would call different people to see if they could convert this record into a CD for me. And I found one not too many miles from my home. And for $25, he turned it into a CD for me, which was, the quality was amazing.
The first gift, 4 dozen long-stemmed red roses for you, and you keep them right there. Now, there's Ralph Wheaton. Where are you, Ralph? There you are. Flash it. There, your picture was just taken, and it'll be in the Hollywood Citizen News for everybody to see. Now, Queen for a Day is happy to make your wish come true, Queen Evelyn. We're going to see that you have a check to cover the cost of the springs that you wanted, and you're going to have it this very day. And here comes the drill you need, along with a few other items. In fact, it's a complete skill home workshop.
Because you were only queen for a day. from mink to rabbit. Ain't it a shame? It's your own fault, baby. Well, I want you to tiptoe down off of that throne, baby. Because you were only queen for a day.
Now, you remember all the work that the younger daughter, Debbie, had put into searching out the photo of her mother, Queen for a Day. Try to imagine what Debbie's reaction would be when she first heard the recording of her mother's moment on that program. We'll hear about that up next. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story.
So don't cry tomorrow. Don't cry tomorrow when you hear me say. God, I want you to step down off of that throne, baby. Cause you were only queen for a day.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. On February 8th, 1957, Evelyn Stewart was, quite literally, queen for a day. She was the winner of one of the very first TV reality shows. Now, in the years before Evelyn died, her youngest daughter, Debbie, became obsessed with finding tapes or other mementos of that day. After much sleuthing, she found a panoramic photo of the show's audience taken on the day that her mother was there. But something better was yet to come. After their mother's death, Debbie's older sister Joanne found an LP, an actual recording of the TV show. Joanne had it transferred to CD and sent it to Debbie with some very specific instructions.
I have sent you something in the mail, and when you receive it, you are to call me before you open it. Will you promise? And I said, what's the big deal? She said, just do it. Will you do it? I said, okay. So I am on pins and needles. It finally comes in the mail. I see the envelope, but I've been told not to open it. So I called Joanne on the phone, and that stinker isn't home. I wait 2 hours.
And so haven't opened it?
No. And I'm going crazy because, I mean, she has made such a big deal. In fact, other members of the family called me personally. Well, what did you think?
And you're going,
I said, think of what? I don't have it. Oh, I better not say anything more then. I said, what is going on? Oh, well, you'll find out. So anyway, it got quite built up. So finally, Joanne gets home and she's received my many messages. Where are you? I'm here waiting patiently. Yeah, yeah. So she finally calls me back
patiently.
And she said, well, that's my term. But anyway, so she finally calls me back. Okay. First of all, go get a CD player. And I said, okay. So I went downstairs, got the CD player, get it plugged in. Is it ready? And I said, yeah. She goes, okay, now open the envelope. So I open it up. Joanne has taken the original, with the help of her, one of her son-in-laws, has taken the original picture of Queen for a Day when Jack Bailey crowned my mother queen and has made this into a CD label. So the CD label of my mother being crowned queen is on this CD. So immediately I know by looking at it, it's something to do with Queen for a Day.
But you don't know what.
But I don't know what. And so I put it in, and it is the original recording of the appearance when my mom was appeared live on the show. It was so weird to hear her voice, so young sounding, and how she talked and shared her story with Jack Bailey and listening to him. And he was just sweet and real fun with her. And it was great, the interaction between the two of them.
Well, what do you want if you're Queen for a Day? That's kind of an unusual thing.
I would like 300 springs and a 5/8-inch drill so that I could make baby swings.
Now, let me ask you this, more about the swings. You know much about baby swings? With 8 children, you should.
Well, I made this designed this one bunny hop baby swing that I call it. I designed it for my neighbor.
Couldn't believe it. They found this record. After all these years of me looking, this treasure had been there all the time and nobody even knew it.
So Joanne, you're listening in on the phone as Debbie is playing this and waiting
yes.
for a reaction. What kind of reaction
yes.
did you get?
She was subdued almost in the beginning. She just
couldn't believe it.
Yeah, she was just so emotional that it was just even hard for much to come out.
Well, but I didn't want to talk because it doesn't last that long. It's like less than 10 minutes, I think, this particular recording, and I just wanted to hear every single word of it. And then when it was over, that's when we just let it spill out, and how did this all happen? And so she told me how she made one for every member of the family, and I just said, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it.
Everybody knew except you at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm wondering what the two of you think the lesson in the story is here. I mean, clearly, that one day in February 1957 changed your mother's life, and I guess by extension changed your lives as well, because you grew up with that. But then
grew up feeling special about it all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then to be able to go back and kind of unearth mementos of that. Joanne, Debbie, what does it mean?
I think you would have to know my mother, what her dreams were. She wanted more than anything to have her children have stardom. That was her dream. To have this unexpected thing happen in her life where she was the star, I think just kind of captures it all. I don't know. It just was more than she dreamed of, I think.
For me, it was the attitude my mother always had of being optimistic. She never thought any dream was too far to reach for. And anything that she strived for, she somehow, through a roundabout way, would end up making it happen. And that's what she really left for me, is that no matter what it is you want in life, you can strive for it and you can dream. And it's not impossible.
Debbie Kotich joined me here in Chapel Hill. She lives in New Freedom, Pennsylvania. Her sister Joanne Rushton was with us from a studio in Los Angeles. If you're interested in reading more about Queen for a Day and the story of Evelyn Stewart and her daughters Joanne and Debbie, well, we have more details and links in some of those wonderful photographs. They're all on our website at thestory.org. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. A couple of weeks ago, I talked to an accomplished architect who'd moved to the United States from Argentina and had some trouble finding work. So he got a job as a waiter. I asked him if he found it demoralizing or discouraging to have those skills as an architect and to wind up clearing away dirty dishes. No, he told me, and I thought that was the end of it. John Wooten, who lives in Coral Gables, Florida, and makes a very good living as a professional waiter, was listening. He called me on my dismissive attitude. Snobbery, I think, was what he called it. And so I invited John to join me.
The service industry, and specifically waiters, is maligned by TV and Hollywood, and it's served up as the ubiquitous example of a dead-end and loser job. And it's an industry that's, you know, portrayed as one made up of washouts and failures.
John, as it turns out, has had many jobs in his life. He has 2 degrees, but he keeps coming back to waiting tables. It was a job, he says, that was the first one he ever had.
3 blocks away from my father's house, where I went to live a week after I graduated from high school, was a French cafe, and they had a help wanted sign. And I thought, oh, this sounds good, and I can walk. I paid well for a 17-year-old. I needed no experience. They were going to train me. And it seemed interesting. I always loved cuisine and food. I grew up in California in the 60s and 70s. My father always loved wine. He, you know, food and cuisine was a consciousness in our house. So it just seemed natural.
When John first started, he didn't think it would last, but waiting table brought him new opportunities, like the time his skills as a singer and an actor got him hired at an elite dinner theater called the Crystal Palace in Aspen, Colorado.
It was 4 months in the winter and 3 months in the spring, and we made money hand over fist. And then we'd have 3 months off in the spring and 3 months off in the fall to spend all that money. Then we'd go out and we'd go skiing or snowboarding, and people would recognize us from the show the night before, and I hardly ever paid for lunch. It was kind of semi-glamorous. And
it seems at this point in your life, the waiting job was appealing because it gave you access to the lifestyle that you wanted. Is that true?
Exactly.
And so was there a point when that changed? Was there a point when you thought to yourself, I'm actually liking the waiting as much as I'm liking the lifestyle that it gives me?
I'm very codependent. I like making people happy and having them smile and hand me money. Like in Aspen, we used to have Prince Bandar, who was the brother to the king of Saudi Arabia, and he is the American ambassador from Saudi Arabia. He built a 210,000-square-foot home with its own ski lift. And when he would come in, he would leave us a 300% tip.
How much would his meal be on a given night?
Well, it was him and 12 of his bodyguards along with 12 CIA agents with Prince Bandar, his wife, and two guests.
And he would feed everyone. Everyone had a seat in the restaurant.
Some of them, unfortunately, were posted outside in big jackets with machine guns underneath them.
Did they still get food out there or not?
Yeah, we would do like meals in containers and take it out to him.
All right, so his bill would be what?
$2,000. And he'd leave
$8,000.
In $100 bills.
Man, what did you guys do with that? Did you have to divvy it up among everyone in the restaurant?
Oh, well, yeah. Just the moment we knew that Bandar was coming in, we would just be gleeful for the rest of the week.
You'd be trying to take someone's shift if you weren't on, right?
Totally. Or if you heard about it the next day and you'd been off, you'd be like, oh, no.
You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. John Wooten left Aspen thinking he was ready for a bigger city and a different job. His mom had been a nurse practitioner, so he went to nursing school, but along with that came access to a lifestyle he hadn't expected.
So I went to nursing school and was introduced to crystal meth, a marvelous product for staying awake and studying all night long. However, once I graduated school, I decided, well, I'm just going to take a few months to party. And 3 years later, I was homeless.
What was the turning point for you? What was the moment that allowed you to come back from the bottom if you were at one point living on the street, addicted to crystal meth?
I got caught by the police. They thought I had a warrant out for me,
right?
Even though it turned out not to be me. And because of that, they cuffed me, they put me in the back of the car, and I had meth on me. So because it was my first offense, I was able to go through the drug court system. You know, you would be tested twice a week with your analysis.
And what was the work that you were doing that helped you out at that time? Were you nursing or were you working as a waiter?
I was working as a waiter on South Beach.
And what part of your getting back on your feet did that job play?
Just having the need to be somewhere at the same time every day provides a structure that a drug addict doesn't have. It doesn't matter if it's 11 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock in the morning. There's nowhere you need to be.
Right.
And then finally, I had slipped a few times and the judge in front of the entire courtroom, because you had to go once a month in front of the judge. About my third month, he says, you know, Mr. Wooten, if you use one more time, I'm going to put you in jail for 21 days and send you back upstairs for a felony charge. Do you understand? And at that point, you know, I still had my dog with me, but I thought if I go to jail for 21 days, I'm going to lose my dog. Somebody's going to have to take her. You know, I had this job and they were working with me, even though I was acting really weird. And I just, at that moment, I just melted. And for 8 months, the threat of jail was what it took for me to stay sober, because I would have dreams every night about using meth. And I'd have to wake up in the morning and go like, no, not today.
How long ago was that, John?
It was 5 years ago.
And you've been clean since then?
Thank God.
John now waits at an upscale steakhouse. It brings him about $60,000 a year. And while he says the money's great, it's the pleasure he gets doing it that continues to attract him.
It is, and especially when they're paying you. You know, the house pays me very little. They provide me with lots of opportunity. They give me my section. They give me health insurance and dental and vision. But it's the customer that I take home the money from.
Mm-hmm.
And so every single customer is a new challenge.
Worst customer ever. Who would that be?
I had one. This man was the new boyfriend and was hated by the whole family. So in his anger and rage, he took it all out on me. The first thing he did was, when his appetizer arrived, he finished it like in one gulp. And I was opening a bottle of wine at the table next to him, and he said, I'm done. And I said, I'll be right there. And he stood up, he took his plate, and he went out to the host desk and threw it on the host desk and started complaining about how horrible I was. And, you know, it's easy to get sucked into those situations emotionally and to think that you can take it personally.
Right.
But if you rise above it and say, wait a minute, this guy is just having a bad day, and everyone else at the table looking down and like apologizing for his behavior, you know, that's pretty much the worst customer is when they're embarrassing themselves. But I do care. I do like making people happy at the end of the day. And they see that I care. And sometimes that's the difference between a good waiter and a bad waiter. You can have mediocre food at a restaurant, but if the service is really good, you end up with a feeling of the whole night was really good, you know? Everything went nice and smooth. You can have great food, but if you get poor service, it's really going to leave you feeling like, gosh, I got ripped off. I really feel taken. There's no satisfaction in the evening at that point. That's how I see it. So I treat people the way I want to be treated.
Okay, so if we talk about this as a relationship that we have on a given evening, I'm the customer, you're the waiter, I come away with a good feeling about the night, I've had great service, your measure still comes down to the tip, right? Because that's the way you gauge my pleasure, I suppose.
Yes and no. I mean, I can't get sucked into the money side. Now, you know, yeah, the money's a great thing, and it can inspire me, and especially with good old white American redneck guys, when they leave you a good tip, you know you did a good job, because you know if you hadn't, they wouldn't.
You're talking about someone who comes in with a very business-like attitude towards eating, right? If they like you and the food, they're going to reward you the same way they would with a contract, right? Well done. Thank you. Here's the
well done.
Check.
Exactly.
And when look back, John, when you're, you know, worrying about how much is that table going to tip and how much is that, can you still get caught up in that on a night's work?
You can, and I do, and I try not to. Ugh, but it's rough being human and working with other humans. You know, it's a mantra. Everyone comes, they eat, they pay, they leave, we clean. You know, it's a frustrating industry. There are nights that it's just not fair. There are nights that it's just not good. Somebody else got all the tables. I didn't get any tables. But you have to keep the continuum in life in front of you, you know? This is a good job at the end of the year. When I do my taxes, I love it.
So what kind of a customer are you when you go out to eat?
I'm extraordinarily critical, but I'm also very understanding. And I'm way over generous because I believe in karma. So,
but what do you do if the waiter's no good, John?
I leave them 15% anyway. I'm such a sucker.
I was going to say, explain that now. 15% for bad service is like encouraging bad behavior, right?
Yeah, you're right. But I live off tips. It's different.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Well, it's clear listening to John that waiting tables has become a home for him. I asked him when he realized that it was no longer a fallback from something else, but a career.
I thought, oh, I don't want to be 40 and be a waiter. But now it's something to be a very good waiter. And it takes a lot of energy and effort and time to become a very good waiter. Having been at the job that I'm at now with 5 years of experience, I now have call parties who come and, you know, they came for the food, but they come back every week and sit in my chairs and give me money because they love me and they're interested in what's going on in my life. And then with enough of those collections behind me, I think, you know, oh, geez, I'm really good at this and people like it and this is a great thing. And it was a slow dawning that, you know, this is a really good thing. This is not a drudgery. I'm good at this and I enjoy it. And I think in life, not everyone, when they leave high school, has a vision of, I'm going to be a doctor. You know, life is a bunch of little steps that take place, and then one day you arrive somewhere, and I'm happy.
John Wooten is a waiter at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Coral Gables, Florida. You can ask for his section. And as ever, if you have a story that you'd like to contribute or thoughts about something that you've heard on the program, give me a call. I'm at 1-888-966-9862. That's 1-888-966-9862. Or leave me a message on our website at thestory.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
American Public Media.